Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome again to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. And every now and then, I just can't be the interviewer. I want to stake my claim and make some statements about some things. And with the kind of work that I do and the vantage points that I have, I thought it appropriate to talk about my favorite topic, and that is to become an architect of change, how to do that by maximizing your social capital. You know, as many of our listeners know, I've had the opportunity to get where I stand for these 3 years on the radio, 220 shows and over 400 podcasts. But one thing that you may all not realize is that I'm a native of the Midwest, and up to my early 30s, except for a year in California and lots of frequent flyer miles managing projects in Europe and Asia, that I was educated and worked primarily from a base between Indianapolis and Detroit. So once a Midwesterner, you're always a Midwesterner. So when reading one of the books in my way later life doctorate program, that was 2004-07, was called Bowling Alone, it really got my attention. And no, this isn't about the Laverne and Shirley popular old television show. Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community, is a 500-page masterful work written by Robert Putnam, a Harvard sociologist, and it's filled with some really compelling literature, data, and charts. Yes, there again, after an engineer's heart, about the shifts in America's social culture. You know, up until the late 90s, believe it or not, bowling was the single most popular exercise activity in the United States that crossed generations, genders, professions, and even social hierarchy. People used to bowl in leagues each week, particularly after work, leaving their titles at the door, as I say. Whereas data shows the numbers of bowlers are relatively the same today, Americans, though, now bowl alone or in very small groups. Or maybe they don't even have to leave their homes and use their Wii fitness systems. So in other words, people are bowling alone. Now, this seemingly small phenomena, though, symbolizes significant social change, and Robert Putnam repeatedly fingers how we have actually become increasingly disconnected from one another, and that's where I want to go today. So whether we think in terms of the PTA, Rotary, church groups, VFW, Bridge and Book Clubs, personally signing our Christmas cards and thank you notes, kids joining the high school band, or homespun events for political parties or the picnic at the local town hall, many of those longstanding Americana institutions have really slid or disintegrated entirely. Or which many of you wrote about in your life experiences along the way, maybe they really haven't even surfaced to the strength that you know. So do you know what the single largest dues-paying membership organization is in the United States today? It's AARP, which you may not be surprised by, given the shift in demographics and all of us baby boomers moving in that direction. But the significance of this is that AARP doesn't have a single regional office or operate a chapter or service involving true face-to-face or group meetings. And yet people pay dues to, quote, belong. In 1960, 63% of Americans of voting age participated in the presidential election, whereas by 1996, that percentage had slipped to 49%. And while most Americans today still claim a serious religious commitment, church attendance in general has been down 25 to 50% from the 1950s, and the number of Americans who attend public meetings of any kind has dropped precipitously 40% between 1973 and the late 1990s. And even the once simple norm of community life has shifted, as one in five Americans moves once a year, while two in five expect to move in the next 5 years. So Robert Putnam claims that statistics like these portray a U.S. population that is increasingly isolated and less empathetic towards its fellow citizens. So indeed, are we then more angrier and less likely or willing to unite in communities or as a nation? You know, frankly, you can listen to weekly syndicated talk radio if you want an answer to that question. Mind you, of course, I'm here on the weekend in a very different format. So while this phenomena of connectedness has been named over 30 years ago by scholars as social capital, no one before Robert Putnam so deftly diagnosed the probable harm when those bonds are broken, or how losing social capital has wreaked havoc on our physical and civic health, nor on the positive side of the coin had everyone before really exalted the fundamental power of social capital to help create a society that's happy, healthy, and safe. So I'd like you to think about your professional day and how significant attention is constantly given to financial capital, in other words, cash investments, asset capital, materials, work in progress, inventory, bricks and mortar, buildings and the like, and hopefully more today than perhaps in the past, human capital, you know, the people really count to make our products and services. But have you heard the word social capital mentioned? So let me offer a quick clarification of terms. Social capital comes in two forms, bonding and bridging. Bonding social capital, as you might imagine, envision a work group or your family unit with very tight associations or ties, open sharing of information, loyalty, galvanized to a common cause, and importantly, taking care of, protecting, and standing up for one another. Indeed, members are truly bonded. Now, bridging social capital involves what's called brokerage. A broker spans or bridges across networks and thus has very fast access to knowledge, contacts, and resources. In short, many times clear power and a competitive advantage to connect multiple sources. Research will often show that those with high bridging social capital typically get promoted faster, earn higher salaries and bonuses, are more creative and enjoy greater learning, and can even move faster to reach objectives, which at the end of the day, from a company standpoint, translates to saving cost. So is one type better than another? I think you probably know that answer. It really depends. Bonding social capital can provide greater collaborations and facilitate collective action. That word is getting everyone moving in the same way, kind of organically, and typically affords greater member commitment, health, happiness, and even longevity. But the ties that can bind also can blind. And that's why perspectives outside of our usual circles, in other words, do that bridging, can be vital to keep us honest with ourselves. And those who love us dearly may not be able to speak the truth, or maybe better put, be objective or know how to support us when we want to change, despite their best of intentions. They may not want us to change, as it might upset the apple cart of the group. So this isn't an either or, in other words, is there are absolute advantages to having bonding social capital within your core network, but bridging social capital between your core networks to reach out to others. Also, I think you know that not all ties between people are created or maintained equally. So whether spending your time social capital through bonding or bridging, which good news, actually you create more social capital by spending it, like keeping up with that Christmas card list, or in this day and age responding to messages through email, LinkedIn, or Facebook, all of these things require the single resource we often don't have enough of and we can't just go buy more of, and that's time. So there are trade-offs. Robert Putnam and many organizational development consultants, yours truly, of course, argue that social capital really, truly matters. A wide range of social good, including education, child welfare, safe neighborhoods, economic prosperity, health, personal satisfaction, and really our vibrant democracy, depend on the interconnectedness among citizens, or in the context of business, amongst company and organizational members. So as those of you who are committed to nonprofit activities know, that charitable giving comes most from those who have connectedness to and a stake in the community. Volunteerism is not a substitute for politics and advocacy, but rather that a person who is politically active and interested is likely to be also one who will volunteer. In other words, they have skin in the game, even if the result is psychic income. Now, I have to admit that Putnam's work has been hotly contested, and in fact, many argue that organizations of old have been rightfully replaced with new, flatter, faster, quicker, smarter channels, and that we do have more specialized support groups that we can lean upon. For example, more people participate indeed in spiritual practices, perhaps as opposed to just formalized religion. And they also take advantage of virtual communities with chat rooms. And I wouldn't doubt that technology channels have indeed allowed us to keep tabs on our remote friends and families, plus facilitate and accelerate global business connectedness. But, you know, at times, don't you feel there's something rather eerie going on with the escalating use, never mind the siphoning of our time related to social networking and social media tools? If not treated carefully, could they perhaps be more like junk food that fools us into thinking we're getting nutrition to build lasting relationships? You heard me mention that I, and you all know that I often travel for business, and there is a real puzzling phenomenon that continues to play out, and that is in airports or on airplanes, people not talking to one another, that they're glued to their screens. And as my children will say, no one's safe when their mom's around, because I'm always got my business cards ready to hand out to hopefully entice another guest here for our show, or in the same way, find a business prospect in the mix of establishing relationships. So my opinion, frankly, is that neighborhoods without sidewalks or limited use of them, homes without front porches but sequestered backyards, and people glued to blackberries when they used to talk to one another, or at least pay attention in meetings, and particularly to guest speakers, has really changed that landscape of our relationships. And add in that, particularly amongst youth, people are texting more and more. So in other words, sound bites of 160 characters. They're not even calling on their cell phones. And I'm sure parents out there like myself and my husband, we stare at our phone bill, and my children, 13 and 16, don't place a single phone call. It's all about texting. Well, now to be sure, social capital can be used for the wrong reasons, in other words, malevolently, to restrict employment opportunities for those outside one's own group, for example, or to demonize people unjustly and spur battles against real or imagined enemies. But because social capital also serves as a resource for many good activities, in other words, benevolency, that impact on our personal and business lives, we should really be concerned about its decline. And this is where I want to go with the balance of my remarks this morning, to the positive power of social capital. Networks reinforced by relationships, trust, shared experiences, and giving, not just the giving and taking that we often measure things. Those three words with the C, connections, collaborations, and community for us to help one another, whether that be to return value to our customers and our investors or to provide for our families. And by the way, have some fun in the process. So what really got my attention, by the way, when I was reading Putnam's book back probably the first time in 2004, was that it was really a wake-up call around the shifting of civil society, philanthropy, and community involvement in political action. You know, people really caring about causes and taking action. But really, that was potentially unraveling with a very similar symptoms inside the very businesses and organizations I'd been part of. In fact, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And then it significantly guided the research that I've dove into then for 3 years on those who lead very high impact change in organizations. For example, think about it. Company sports leagues, not in many firms these days. Celebrating birthdays in the office, probably the exception, not the rule. Buying a colleague a cup of coffee, which, quite frankly, from my manufacturing background, was a must. It was like exchanging gold between supervisors and the workers. Not too much this day and age because everyone's grabbed one at the drive-thru on their way in, by the way, at 5:35 each. And people carpooling, you know, probably not likely because people have to come in early or work late, or plus they want to do their voicemail as they drive, or maybe they just need a break from the noise, I realize it. Company picnics with family members, the response is, quite frankly, what, with our family schedule? And then one of my pet peeves, of course, is networking organizations that are all about pushing business cards and 30-second elevator speeches, just like it was some kind of speed dating event. That is not, folks, how you make connections that are genuine to your advantage to really leverage. Even eating in the company cafeteria, you know, really sitting down with colleagues to enjoy lunch instead of buying a sandwich and returning to eat alone or bowl alone at your desk or in your car between appointments. You know, it's almost a thing of a past. And if I think about my own life, the amount of times I was influenced or I was able to influence others, it came in the course of those lunch discussions or walking down the hall to get a cup of coffee together. So is there any surprise today that the number one reason people are unhappy in the work environment, and in fact, 42% in a recent survey, and the next reason was only at a 10%, gave not feeling like they have a voice or being heard. People are lost and unconnected. And in fact, Gallup recently refreshed that data to say that 1 in 3 are feeling disengaged from their current job situation these days, which is meaning not only are they not giving 100% to the task at hand, they certainly aren't passionate about what they're doing, and thus even giving over 110%, which is really where the new and innovative ideas start bubbling up to the forefront. So social capital, as thin as ice inside organizations, some might say, can be fortified by connections outside. In other words, what we do in our 5 to 9 life. But quite frankly, those can also be quite fragile for people, given the hours of the day tied up away from our family and loved ones, let alone our missing personal downtime to replenish and reflect, not just be in the doing mode. Have you ever thought about why the rumor mill moves so fast, faster than any tops-down communication inside an organization? It's really fundamental. Information moves freely through trusted networks. And that often means, by the way, the wrong information as well as the right information. So it really is the know who that gets you what you need, or the know who that you can put out on the airwaves what you want others to get. As frequent listeners know of my earlier life inside corporate America, and I was one of those, I call it pathological mavericks, that was always attracted to leading really big, messy change initiatives. For example, speeding up the development of a new car by building the prototypes at the plant versus in the more pristine and controllable lab environment. And in fact, at the time we did this, everyone, including my boss, said it just couldn't be done. Well, guess what? We went and did it. Or the decision we had about closing a flagship Florida operation and my having to convince 5,000 people that uprooting their families and moving to Connecticut was a good thing, at the same time we were shouldering 2 military jet fighter programs critical to the U.S. Department of Defense. Or one of the most challenging on my list of things, and thought to be totally psychotic by most of my peers, was my leading the way for a cross-divisional merger of a very large and profitable P&L with an underperforming, quite frankly, wicked stepsister division. And while I knew and I believed it was the right thing for the total corporation, who was kidding who? This truly, at the end of the day, would be an acquisition in sheep's clothing, us being acquired, and in time would lead to my exiting the firm. And it did, and that list goes on. Now, common to each of these quests that I just outlined, and the place us serial architects of change go first, is really to first understand the superstructure as well as the infrastructure of an organization based on the flow of that information. And I'm not talking about the formal org chart, nor necessarily the who knows what or the who knows how, but really, truly, we get positioned very quickly amongst the who knows who. And we look to ways to foster collaboration to allow going successfully into uncharted territory, then access the most core what and how in the process. Again, that word, who knows who. Social capital thus gives access truly to knowledge and influence quickly for lasting change. So this isn't just about the network or the links that connect people on the grid, mind you. And I'm particularly for outsiders or those that are new to an organization. It really is about how to tune into what's moving across the grid. You're discovering and understanding, respecting and honoring at the same time the power of relationships, the trust, and the shared history between the people that are in the organization. But for the particularly those of you who may be new to an enterprise, whether you be in the working situation or in the leadership situation, you have to very quickly get tuned in and deliberately go where there are gaps or where there is the negative noise that needs to be dealt with too in the same time. I think we all know organizations that are rich with positive social capital. Think about it. You can feel it when you enter the building or the group of people. There's a buzz, an energy, passion, creativity, openness, lightheartedness, but yet some very seriousness of purpose. In fact, lightheartedness often turned into jokes and pranks and fun times in the office or in after hours. There is also in the process, though, room for some very human behavior. Making mistakes, forgiving, challenging, confronting, and laughing, and primarily, hopefully, laughing at ourselves. So that real power, then, of tapping social capital rests truly in each of our ability to influence others, to enable integration, in other words, ourselves being integrated into an environment as well as helping others in that role, and also inspire inclusion. And this is an important thought. This is as opposed to inadvertent or deliberate exclusion. I often say when people misread a relationship challenge that were they indeed intentionally excluded from being invited to that meeting, or did someone forget to include them? This is also often really misunderstood. And then finally, between, again, influence, integration, inspire, inclusion, is an often misunderstood word, and that is to live in reciprocity. Let me explain this. By this, I mean giving and helping someone. It's not done with an expectation to give or get back immediately or maybe even ever. Think about it. Reciprocity, that you're going to give but not necessarily expect to get anything back immediately or even ever, but that you know deep down that sometime in the future, your open investment of support, time, money, or ideas to others in this community will come back to you in a profoundly important way. And perhaps not through the person you helped, but someone to whom they passed the baton to first. So I'd like you to think beyond networks, to those who really have got your back, or those who pick you up when you're left off, or those with whom you are so in sync with that you finish each other's sentences. And they can tell you when you're off your rocker or lost in the weeds without any fear of retribution or negative reaction. Truly, folks, this is trust. Now, what do I mean by shared experiences with deep contextual merit? The idea of traveling together, or introducing a new system or financial reporting where going live has almost got everyone going dead in the process. If not, our families think that we've gone dead because we put so much time into projects like this. Or for many listeners these days that are impacted by change, those graphic examples of companies pressing to remain vibrant and growing, or a merger or an acquisition that causes shuffling the assignment deck, or organizations having to downsize to survive, or even those in the fight out of or into bankruptcy. The end of the day, the people that guide through these kind of dynamic changes, whether they realize it or not, they're getting a really shared experience that's going to keep them connected. You know, I've always liked to cite the example of Dr. Garen Thurston of Partners in Animal Wellness Services, that's PAWS. It's a veterinary practice that integrates Western and Eastern methodologies to care for our four-legged furry friends. Dr. Thurston and all the colleagues there have a really state-of-the-art surgery, rehab, and pet wellness center, and I just feel better when I go there. And indeed, Garen and my family, along with her husband, Dr. Randy Aronson, of course, the radio pet vet who precedes my show, we were celebrating late last year because our family's 11-year-old black lab, Robbie, was miraculously waltzing and wagging around, barking and trying to con food for us again at the dinner table. 8 months before that, he couldn't even lift up his head and was slipping and sliding when he was walking, a condition traced to spinal arthritis and likely nerve damage. And quite frankly, we were preparing for losing him to the great tennis ball chasing camp in the sky, as I say. Well, here we are now a year later, and I know that this might sound like an enthusiastic referral, which I'm apt to give, but it really goes much deeper than that, as I want to share the power of social capital and connectedness. Between Randy and Garen and I, it really goes rooted into the first time that Garen and I met, which was almost 3 years ago, on the day that we carried our 14-year-old golden retriever, Piper, for the last time. Now, with amazing empathy, poise, and compassion, Garen helped us set our dog Piper free. And we shed tears and a flurry of spiritual joy together as Piper lifted her head one last time, smiled, wagged her big old tongue, and with very clear eyes seemed to say, "Thanks for a great life, and I'll catch you at the pearly gates," before sighing and resting her head in my lap one last time. Now, this is what I mean by trust in a precious shared experience, something that no one will ever take away from Garen and me, nor likely replicate in a similar fashion. Nothing anyone will ever take away from all of you or what you've lived through, remarkable experiences with your families, your friends, and your work colleagues. That's what bonding social capital results. Now, you often hear me say how I believe you can get anything you want in your life so long as you help enough other people get what it is that they want. Or you hear me say also that people don't really care about what you know until they know how much you care. Well, whether that's through bonding or bridging social capital, we should all count our blessings and protect with gratitude our relationships and consider ways to carefully open up to be more authentic, connections, and with others. So in that spirit, I'd like to challenge everyone today to trade up as you work together, particularly across organizations, your work, school, church, volunteer groups, and start with instead how it is that I can help you. And maybe that next get-together will be at the local bowling alley. So with that, stick with us. We're going to take a quick news break, some commercials, and come back for two special guest segments here on Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.